Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show. I have to ask you, to start things off, where were you born?
I was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, in America.
Now, when you were growing up, were you surrounded by a lot of music?
Yes, in a way. My mother often played classical music while doing things around the house.
Now, when you were young, I would imagine you had a lot of memories growing up relating to music. Do you remember your earliest musical memory?
Well, my parents say I used to beat out rhythms as a baby while music played on the stereo, but I don't have clear memories of that. The memories I do have are listening to music while lying down on the floor with the speakers sitting right next to my ears, pretending to play drums on my high school textbooks to rock music when I should have been studying, and loving the mysterious sounds of the Oscar Peterson Trio with Ray Brown and Herb Ellis long before I knew who they were.
Now let's stick to your childhood for a minute. When you were growing up and listening to all this music, I have to wonder, was your family musical at all? Did they have any musical inclinations?
No, not really.
Speaking of firsts, do you remember the very first jazz concert that you ever attended?
I'm not sure I remember, but perhaps it was a pianist in Cincinnati named Ed Moss. He was performing with a trio in his club, and I remember the bassist played barefoot, which was kind of unusual, I thought. And many years later, I had the opportunity to play with Ed Moss as an adult.
You lived in Singapore for a while. Now, how was that move for you from a musical perspective?
Well, I never knew it at the time, but in retrospect, being there was a pinnacle in my life musically. I had a steady six-night-a-week gig, a trio gig, had a fan base, and eventually I recorded four CDs there, played at major festivals, and made my entertainment company a major player in the music business scene. I knew top management, hoteliers, and chefs on a first-name basis and launched my composing, band-leading, and recording career there.
One of the greatest guitarists of all time was Jimi Hendrix. Now, I know that one of your early influences was this great axe wizard, and I was wondering what it was about his playing that captivated you so much.
What inspired me about his playing was his feeling, his ability to convey emotions through his playing, and visually he was fun to watch too. He's what I call an honest player.
Let's go way back in time to somebody who was very helpful for you in your early development. I'm speaking of Helen Hoffman. Now, what was the one lesson that you learned from her that you still tend to adhere to today?
Wow, that's a real blast from the past. Perhaps one of the most important things I learned from her was that I was good. She kind of reassured me about that. And her discipline was helpful as well. Discipline to practice.
Over the years, you must have had many jazz guitarists that influenced your style of playing.
Well, to be honest, other instrumentalists influenced me perhaps more than guitar players. Musicians of the John Coltrane Band, Art Blakey's Band, Miles Band, and for composing and groove, Horace Silver. After Hendrix, Wes Montgomery was the biggest influence for guitar. Though he and Hendrix played a different style, Wes has what I described of Hendrix. You know, he's fun to watch, you know, enjoying himself, and he has the ability to convey emotion in his playing. And they're both unique stylists. You can recognize their playing right away.
Now that you're living in Japan, Greg, what is the music scene like there?
Let me say that Japan is very hard. The cultural and language gap is one of the biggest problems. And when most people think of Japan, they're thinking of the economic boom of the bubble economy about 10 years or so ago. they call it the bubble economy here. It was when people were spending freely and credit was easy to get and salaries were high. And what some people don't realize is those days are gone. But on the other hand, because of its size and population and economic strength and influence, it does offer many opportunities. It's the opposite of being a big fish in a small pond like I was in Singapore.
Now, what is the advantage of that?
And the advantage of that is that it's not as limiting. There are more possibilities. But in Japan, to capitalize on those opportunities, one needs more time than one might in the West. In Japan, relationships are built slowly and change comes slowly. And in that way, it's a very conservative place. And it's taken me much longer than I'd like to build a successful playing career here. But it is happening. Another thing I should mention about Japan that affects all the musicians here alike is it's the most expensive place to live on Earth. So one needs even more gigs to survive here than usual, and many musicians, including me, can't support themselves on music alone.
Well, Greg, you know, I'd like to know, and I'm sure many of the listeners would like to know, how many guitars do you own?
I sold my first guitar, a Gibson Les Paul, in Singapore. I own four now, though I don't play them all regularly. My main guitar is an Epiphone Triumph from sometime in the late 30s and mid-40s, before the end of World War II. I bought that in Cincinnati from another guitar player after looking for a long time for one that felt good and sounded good. Since then, it's been operated on many times, but I feel the good sound and the feel that I liked originally with it warrants all the money I've spent repairing it over the years. I own a steel string Loudon, a George Loudon acoustic, which I used once or twice on my integration recordings, once on the title track of Where We Find Ourselves, and once on my latest release, Two's Company, Three's a Crowd, on the pop song, If. I own a baby Taylor that my late wife bought me for my birthday, and that's been a great asset because it fits in the overhead rack of an airplane, and I've taken it on all my diving trips, my diving honeymoon, and many of my compositions have been composed on that guitar. I also own a nylon string classical guitar that I haven't played since I was doing the steady high T gig on the executive floor of the Ritz-Carlton in Singapore. That guitar served me well in Hong Kong and Singapore, but not here so far.
Now, what projects are you currently involved with for 2006?
I had planned to record my 8th CD titled Paint a Picture, Tell a Story, but that's been postponed. One problem is that one of my Worldbeat band members is moving back to the States. His absence in the band has to be dealt with. And there are other reasons. Right now, I have my hands full getting ready for challenging gigs in other people's bands, and like most working musicians, 80% of our time is spent, sadly, trying to get gigs rather than practicing or writing. My immediate goal is to do as well as I can on the gigs I have coming up and get some new gigs for later this year. And longer-term goals are to finish writing the material for my next two CDs and get a recording schedule in place. Somewhere in between all that, I'd like to get home to see my mom in the States. It's been almost 7 years since my last trip home.
One thing I've always admired about your recordings, Greg, is that your recordings consist of mostly original material. Now, I have to wonder, does composing take up a large part of your musical life?
Unfortunately, getting proper exposure takes more of my time than writing, and yet it seems like paddling upstream, a battle we may never win. That is, to get a worldwide audience, a major distribution contract, or even to be able to get my music heard on the radio or sold in stores is very tough. Yet, writing and producing CDs that feature my writing is one of the most important things in my life. It's my kind of legacy to produce quality jazz recordings. It's my contribution, giving something back, and it's something that lasts. It's a bona fide statement. It's proof, and nobody can take it away. And those things appeal to me now more than ever.
With your hectic schedule, do you ever find time to practice at all?
In the past few years, generally, no. But recently, as I said earlier, I have been practicing to learn music I have to play at upcoming gigs, music that's not my own and not standard material. Actually, this interview is taking up my practice time today. These days, the only time I can practice is early in the morning into the afternoon, Monday through Friday, in between emails, errands, eating, cooking, and cleaning. And my practice method is to use a metronome and slowly build up speed on the music that I have to read. And if I don't have anything specific to practice like that, then I would prefer to compose.
Now, when it comes to composing music, who has influenced your style of composing?
Perhaps Horace Silver in the beginning. Now, maybe nobody, or maybe everybody.
Let's talk a little about your time at Berklee College in Boston. Now, what was the most important lesson that you learned when you were attending that prestigious school?
Most important thing I learned while studying at Berklee might be how important it is to play as much as possible. For the most part, I lost interest in the classes, but I had a lot of interest in what I heard coming from the practice rooms. I liked counterpoint class, and I liked harmonic analysis. Maybe my favorite knowledge gleaned from my time at Berklee was the concept of upper structure triads, upper and lower approach notes, chord scales, how to determine what scale goes with each chord, bar by bar, in a song. And also, a sight reading tutor taught me that to read music, you have to be able to count the rhythm first. That was an important lesson. But basically, my time there was being poor. I had no money. Asked a lot of questions. I practiced a lot. And I hung around the practice rooms looking for people to play with.
What are some of your favorite jazz recordings of all time?
Here we go. The Stylings of Silver by Horace Silver. Live at Birdland, 1963, Art Blakey. Rip, Rig, and Panic by Rosson Roland Kirk. Out of This World with Pepper Adams, Donald Byrd, and featuring Herbie Hancock. The Incredible Guitar of Wes Montgomery. In and Out and The Real McCoy with Joe Henderson and McCoy Tyner. Same period, personnel, and style. First Baseman by Paul Chambers, the bassist, featuring tunes by Yusef Lateef. Luminescence by Barry Harris with Pepper Adams and Slide Hampton arrangements. Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley. Hub Tones with Freddie Hubbard and Herbie Hancock. Dinah Washington live in 1963. And maybe an out-of-print trio with Don Thompson on the bass by Jim Hall, just called Jim Hall Live on the Horizon label. It's a great record. And that label, by the way, always has some solo printed out, which was kind of neat. Herbie Hancock's Thrust. Kenny Wheeler's New High, featuring Keith Jarrett. Paul Desmond, featuring the great Canadian guitarist Ed Bickert. Mountain in the Clouds, Miroslav Vitus, the bassist, Czech bassist, also released as Infinite Search. All the Way with Little Jimmy Scott. Blowing the Blues Away and Finger Popping with Horace Silver, Quintet. Miles Records, Four and More, Live at the Black Hawk. Coltrane's Transition. Live at the Village Vanguard, Afro Blue, and the one with Johnny Hartman. Roll Call, Hank Mobley, with Blakey and Hubbard. The Big Beat, Art Blakey. Unity, Larry Young. What else? Jean-Luc Ponty's Sunday Walk, not a very known well-known record. Sam Jones, the Soul Society and the Chant, 10-piece bands. The Philly Joe Jones big band records. Oh gosh, so many. My favorite jazz groups are Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Horace Silver's group, John Coltrane's group, and Miles Davis's group. Favorite composers are Duke Ellington, Alec Wilder, Billy Strayhorn, Wes Montgomery, Coltrane, Tad Dameron, Cedar Walton, Monk, Mingus, Golson, Shorter. And some of my favorite soloists are Pepper Adams, Coltrane, Lester Young, Bird, Wayne Shorter, Joe Henderson, Mobley, Kirk, Pharoah Sanders, Booker, Irving, Dexter Gordon, Sonny Rollins, Slide Hampton, Lee Morgan, Freddie Hubbard, Fats Navarro, Booker Little, Miles, Herbie Hancock, Barry Harris, McCoy Tyner, Bill Evans, Phineas Newborn, Jimmy Smith, Bud Powell, Horace Silver, Wynton Kelly, Jackie Byard, Cedar Walton, Joanne Brackeen, Paul Chambers, Sam Jones, Ron Carter, Roy Haynes, Elvin, Art Blakey, Dejanette, Grant Green, Wes Montgomery, Jim Hall, Nancy Wilson, Dinah Washington, Jimmy Scott, Johnny Hartman, Sarah Vaughan, Betty Carter, Billie Holiday, Ray Charles. And for the younger players, I like Mulgrew Miller and Terrence Blanchard and Steve Turay and Christian McBride. This list also appears on my website.
For a time you were studying to become a chef. Now, did you see this as a turning point in your life?
Moving to Massachusetts and moving in with a lady who would become my wife for 14 years was a turning point. But as far as my music career goes, it was quitting that cooking job and trying to make it only on plane that was also a turning point. And at the same time, getting the regular gig at that inn, the Lord Jeffrey Inn, and booking the music there for the time I lived there.
When you were living in New York, did you have much opportunity to perform and gig around the city?
The first time I was there in the late 70s, while and after I attended college, I played at a small club across from my father's place in Roslyn, New York, called the Little Club. We played jazz rock fusion in a power trio with Randy Coven on bass. After that, not really. I had one gig with a singer at some club in the village, but at that time, I don't even think I was actually living there yet. Most of my time in New York City was spent doing other things, although I did have a chance to listen to a lot of great groups and buy a lot of records.
With your busy schedule, do you have any time to do any teaching or mentoring students?
I like the answer the late great guitarist from Cincinnati, Kenny Poole, said about this. When asked the same question, he said, "I teach every night I play, but the students don't show up." I like that. But seriously, I did teach while in Singapore for the Arts University there, and I've taught at other points in my life as well. I do enjoy it, but in Japan I'm teaching only English so far, not music.
Is there any musical setting that you'd like to perform in that you haven't performed in so far?
Of course, many. But mostly I just like more chances to perform on tour so more people could hear what I have to offer. And a steady playing gig would be nice, like I've had in the past. And in short, just being able to make a living in music would be wonderful.
Your stint at Doc's Place must have been a real thrill for you, Greg, because I think you had a chance to be in your element and meet and perform with various musicians. It must have felt like heaven for you. Now, what was that experience like?
Heaven was for sure my time in Singapore, playing with my trio at Raffles every night, and occasionally playing at festivals or doing short tours with my large world beat ensemble, all the while keeping my steady gig intact. Nothing can compare to the joy I experienced there, where literally every single night was fun. I was really doing what I wanted to do and getting paid well for it as well. And as for Doc's Place in Cincinnati, it was, of course, an important part of my life. And I did play with many different players there. That's true. But when you mention being in heaven, my thoughts are immediately drawn to Singapore and the playing experiences I had there. Perhaps one reason was simply my own development as a person and a musician. I was much more mature by the time I got to experience a steady 6-night-a-week gig playing the music I like for decent pay. So I'm sure that has some influence on my thinking there.
Are there any guitarists on the scene today that make you sit up and take notice?
Well, someone sent me a link on the internet of a guy who transcribed and played an Oscar Peterson solo note for note. That wouldn't make anyone sit up and take notice. But generally, no. I think I'm not so well informed, and I don't get a lot of chances to listen to new music. And I don't think Japan is really the place to be to hear what's happening now. People here are really kind of behind the times in a way, and there's not enough chance to hear new things. However, having said that, the last thing that made me sit up and take notice was watching a program here featuring a Brazilian singer named Maria Jorge. I'm not sure if I pronounce her name right, but there was a guitarist in her band, but who was good. But hearing what she was doing with her voice and her band, that was a real sit-up-and-notice experience. I think the guitarist was from Central Europe, but it was guitar, drums, and piano, and the piano player was doing all the arrangements. But she was really something exceptional, and I've been looking for her CD so far with no luck.
There was a time in your life, Greg, that you were bothered with what's known as carpal tunnel syndrome. Now, to a guitarist or any musician, that could be devastating. Now, I was just wondering whether you're still afflicted with this condition or, you know, if it's still bothering you at all.
Probably, but it seems to be under control now.
One of my favorite recordings of yours is Integration, and what I like about it is the way that the arrangements are balanced. Now, one of my favorite compositions from this recording is Sato's Serenade. What is this song about?
It's titled after my late wife, Takako Saito, and it was a favorite among the musicians on that date as well. It was played at her funeral, too. It's pretty because of the unique harmony, the melody and chord relationship, the trombone counterline, and the sensitive accompaniment by pianist Mei Shum and the others on the date. It's also very challenging to solo on that song. Balancing arrangements and deciding tune order is something that I feel I'm pretty good at. If you listen to all my CDs, especially the last four, I feel the order and placement of each tune is perfect. And each CD has an appeal all its own and is completely, is complete within itself. They each make a good, full, and complete statement.
I understand that you went through a period of self-discovery while you were in Singapore. Now, how did this period in your life affect you both personally and musically?
Well, an artist's art is only as good as an artist's development as a person, I think. As we mature as people and as we accumulate experiences, our artistic expression grows with meaning and depth. We become better able to express only what's most important, and I think our playing becomes more to the point and more powerful as a result.
Where we find ourselves is an ambitious project with many memorable moments. Now, Greg, I have to ask you, did this particular recording of yours take a long time to make?
It didn't take long to record it. We would like to have had more time. We had a deadline because the players lived in Japan with busy lives and they couldn't stay in Singapore indefinitely. So we were under the gun time-wise, so to speak. And also we had very little time to get comfortable soloing on the material. We even had to rehearse quickly in the studio a couple of the songs. However, the events leading up to that recording were, of course, very long for me. That CD broke, a four-year playing and recording hiatus caused by the personal events I experienced from 2001 to 2005, moving from Singapore to China to Japan and going through my wife's deadly battle with cancer.
9/11 in New York City was a devastating moment in world history. Now, how did this particular event affect your life, Greg? And do you think that there was anything positive that came out of this?
No, nothing positive came from that. Or at least, if something did, it's not easy to see. It resulted in further and sudden downturns in the music business in Singapore. Jobs were immediately canceled, contracts were broken or not extended. Tourism came to a virtual standstill. And when those things happen, musicians are among the first to feel the axe.
How have your various life experiences enriched you musically?
Well, I would say that, you know, your personal life and your music, your art, it's connected. So I wouldn't be a good musician if there weren't some connection to my personal life. So our personal life gives us the fuel and substance for creating and expressing what we do with our instruments.
Love Goes Forth is an interesting take on the classic Love for Sale. Interesting changes throughout. And I had to wonder that while you were recording this, Greg, you seemed to have a lot of fun in the studio. I think the band really caught on and made the moment very special.
I've always wanted to record this, but to be honest, I thought I could solo much better on that than I did on the record. But I really love Pat's trombone solo. Anyway, it's a tune that I've enjoyed soloing on for years. I use the changes that are very similar to the ones Miles and Bill Evans used when they recorded it. And my original melody is very tricky, and it was a big challenge for the sax player. We only had one shot at this song in the studio. So it is what it is. I like the conga drum a lot, and credit goes to my excellent drummer and percussionist Mark DeRose, who handled both parts remarkably throughout the recording.
Thank you so much for dropping by today, Greg. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and all the best in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Randy.